This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not so nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley. And this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in New Hampshire talking about an abduction survival story.
Then we'll talk about one of the most brutal, seemingly random and senseless crimes in history. So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Granite State.
Abby Hernandez was born October 12, 1998, in Manchester, New Hampshire. She and her mother were both very outdoorsy and athletic. Same. Just kidding. So she participated in several sports in high school, and at 14 years old, she just started her freshman year. She would walk to and from school every day, and on October 9th, 2013, she typically, like she does, walks to school, No big deal, nothing's out of the ordinary. She gets there on time. She leaves around 2:30, which is her normal time for leaving. And this would later be corroborated by the school librarian who saw her leaving through the window of the school. Like she was, there's windows in the library. So her teacher.
Oh, her teacher saw her.
The library through teacher the window. Saw her I thought, through the window.
Like if she's crawling through the window, why she's would sneaking you out. Not stop her?
She's sneaking out of school.
Okay, I get it.
When her mother got home from her nursing job later that evening, Abby wasn't there. And her mom knows something's wrong. They're very close. She knew that if Abby had something going on or she wasn't going to be home, she would have texted her mom. She would have let her know.
Mm-hmm.
So she texts Abby multiple times. No answer, no response. So she thinks maybe she left her phone at school. Maybe she stayed late at school, lost track of time. So she drives to the school. She's looking for Abby. She runs into the librarian and she says, no, she left. I saw her leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So now mom is like, where is she? Is she hurt? Did she get hit by a car? She calls the hospitals. They haven't seen her. So by 7, she's still has no clue. Goes to the police immediately. Yeah, yeah. She's, my daughter's gone. She's not answering. Don't know where she is. What do you think the police said?
She ran away.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
But her mom is like, no. Her birthday's in 3 days. We have a huge party planned. She didn't run away.
She would get birthday money. That's the whole birthdays.
And she's 14. It's like,
you're not going to leave birthday presents. But you know what I mean? At that age.
Right. We're not fighting. There's no turmoil in her life. Like, she's loved by her. She has a boyfriend. Like, there's no – she wouldn't have just ran away.
And, I mean, did she pack up belongings to take with her?
There's nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing's amiss.
Why do they always – and even if they ran away, okay, find her. She's 14.
Right. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
We still need to find her.
Exactly.
So, police question – all the peeps, the friends, the classmates, the boyfriend, and they say she left school. She walks through the field hockey field and kind of along like a power line trail heading home around 2:30. Everybody's like, yeah, this is when she left. She was texting back and forth with several of her friends as she was walking. Last text was sent at 2:53. They track her cell phone pings, and around 3:10, her cell phone seemed to disappear.
Oh, no.
And she was about a mile from her house.
How far away was it? Do you know what her walk was?
Not far. I mean, she was – the last ping was a mile from her house, so.
Mm-hmm.
Several months go by.
Months.
Ugh. They have searched. They have looked. They have talked to people. It's going nowhere fast. They had, like I said, looked at all of her friends, classmates, boyfriend, family, everybody. There's nothing that makes them think that any of these people are involved in her disappearance. And she has a bank account and there's no activity. So she's not taking any money out. She's not used a debit card. Her phone's just disappeared. Yeah. There's nothing. Her mom is still searching for her. She's not going to give up. That's every mother. You're not going to quit. Then on November the 6th, her mother receives a letter allegedly written by Abby. It was in her handwriting, and her DNA was found on the paper.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it basically says she loves and misses her mom, and she's seen the news. She is alive and healthy. And you can Google this letter and read more of it. It's kind of big. I'm just paraphrasing. Police did not release this letter for several months because they were like, her captor, if she has been kidnapped, or whoever she's with, may not know that she has sent this, and we don't want them to retaliate.
Oh, I wouldn't have even thought about that.
That's why you're not a cop, Lacey.
Exactly. No, that's, that makes sense.
So nothing comes for about a month, and then the police are like, okay, we're going to release this now.
Uh-huh. Was she saying, like, I'm okay, don't look for me? I left on my own account?
In a nutshell. So once this hits the news, people are thinking, okay, this is a ruse. Like, this is, she's gone with a boy or whoever. She's ran away, went willingly, or the parents are in on it. Like, it's
what?
It's not like they. It's becomes very almost scandalous. And
I know how it gets, especially even on Facebook things. Just, yes, you read the comments, and it's just so wild.
And you're like, how are you so mean? Yes, you don't even
and
know.
That's so true.
So, like I said, people are pissed at the family. They think that they were using police resources where they didn't need to.
Good Lord.
Want them to pay back all the money that the police had spent and time, you know, in time and resources trying to locate her.
Wow.
They thought it was a scheme. Yeah. They're pissed at the family.
That is.
But thank God the police are not this type of people, and they're like, no, something's wrong. We are going to continue to investigate her disappearance. She's a 14-year-old girl.
She still needs to be home.
Right. Her mom goes to the media and then writes a letter back to Abby, and nothing.
Like, reads it, an open letter?
And yes.
Okay.
So they're still searching for Abby. They search the mountains. They use helicopters. Nothing.
I wonder where it was postmarked.
I'm
sure they looked into that.
I'm sure. Yeah. I didn't.
There's ways to.
I didn't see anything that said, oh shit, here's the, you know. So on July the 20th, 2014, so it's been about 9 months.
Man.
Abby walks in.
What?
To her house. She says, Mom. Mom runs to her. She can tell that she has been through it. She is.
What?
Thin. She is pale. She's lost a ton of weight.
She's just walking in the house, though?
Walks into the house. The authorities are contacted, and she is brought in and has to tell the police everything that has happened in the last 9 months.
Oh, my God. I'm glad.
She says she was kidnapped. She was held in a shed where she had been abused for the last 9 months. The day she had disappeared, she was walking home from school, and a man pulled up and offered her a ride. She accepted the ride because she had not worn socks that day, and her shoes were rubbing blisters on her feet. And she was so close to her house that she was, I mean, literally a mile closer from my work to your house. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't
just
think.
Just a few minutes.
Just a
drive.
Few minutes. God. Yeah. He asked her if he could stop by Home Depot.
Oh, man.
Along the way. And she's like, yeah, that's fine. I'll just walk from there to my house. And then he pulls out a gun.
Oh, my God.
He threatens to slit her throat and blow her brains out. He said, if you don't behave, I will kill you. This man was Nate Kibbe. He was born on July 15th, 1980. And a lot of his high school classmates would go on to say that he was very aggressive and cruel.
Oh, no.
He allegedly had a hit list of other students while he was still in school and claimed to be a part of a gang called the Vipers. Those who were acquainted with him said he was hostile. He was kind of an oddball, and they did their best to steer clear of him. He thrived on conflict and was constantly in trouble with the law. He got in trouble for grabbing a 16-year-old as she tried to get on the school bus, for possessing marijuana, and for providing false information while trying to obtain a weapon. A lot of people saw him as argumentative and like he was proactive and he wanted to just constantly, he loved conflict. I mean, we know people like that who just, they want to argue for just the sake of arguing. Mm-hmm. He was arrested after a traffic dispute allegedly ended with him following a woman to her house and shoving her to the ground.
What in the world? Oh.
Yes, but he seemed to live a double life. He worked at a local machine shop and was a model employee.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you would think someone like that could not contain themselves.
Well, right. And his neighbors would say that he would frequently go on anti-government rants.
Oh, God.
So, back, they're in the car.
Yeah.
Or the truck, whatever. They're driving. He's kidnapped her. He puts a shirt over her head and handcuffs her hands. He breaks her phone. She kept trying to peek out of the shirt to kind of see where she was going. And he noticed her doing this and started shocking her with a taser.
Oh, my God.
He repeatedly shocked her and asked her if it hurt when he did it. And he's like, well, now you know. Don't do it again. So they drive over 30 miles. He puts her in a shipping container that he had in his yard with no windows that had a no trespassing sign on it. Yes. He put tape over her eyes.
Oh, man.
And a motorcycle helmet on her head. He zip tied her wrist. He zip tied her wrists and her ankles and then raped her. He also made her wear a shock collar.
Oh, my God.
And if she screamed, he would shock her. She was instructed to call him master. She had a chain around her neck and was forced to wear a diaper.
Oh, my God.
He threatened to kill her family and her pets if she escaped. He threatened to burn her alive. He would make her watch the news coverage about her. Her mom crying on TV.
Oh, my gosh.
And also the people who didn't believe that she was really gone.
Oh, my God.
So she was like,
that's awful.
People don't believe that they think I ran away. No one's looking for me.
That's horrifying.
She said she prayed every day, and she slowly started to gain his trust. He would allow her to read books, and one of the books she read was a cookbook. And that's how she learned his name, Nate Kibbe. It was inside the book on one of the pages. Because he never said his name. He made her call him master. So he got Abby to help him make counterfeit money. And he started basically feeling like she was his partner.
Wow.
He used this money to pay a sex worker. When the sex worker tried to use this money at Walmart, it was flagged as counterfeit. The cops were called and she was arrested. Mm. She told him where she got the money. Mm-hmm. She told him, hey, I'm a sex worker. This man paid me. This is where I got this money. And she calls Nate and basically tells him, the cops are on the way to your house. So.
Wow.
She didn't know anything about this Abby girl.
Well, yeah.
Being in the shipping container outside. She just thought he was being a shithead and making fake money. So he tells Abby, I have to let you go, but you got to promise not to tell anyone.
What?
Because he's about to go to jail for this counterfeit money. So he's like, I'm going to let you go so they don't see you here when they get here. So she's like, okay, I promise I'm not going to tell anybody. So he drives her to an old building in North Conway, just about a mile from where she lived. And he lets her go and she walks home.
He thinks that no one's... Okay,
she
this
had
guy.
Built this.
I'm glad he's that dumb. I'm
she
glad.
Built this relationship with him. So at first, Abby did not tell the police who he was. She said she didn't know who he was because she was scared that he was going to do all the things he'd been threatening to do.
That sucks.
And then about a week later, she finally was like, listen, this is his name. This is who it was. So they were able to track him down and arrest him. His bail was set at $1 million. He was facing over 200 charges, including kidnapping, sexual assault, rape, criminal threatening, illegal use of a gun, and obviously so much more. Mm. He's set in jail for 2 years before going to trial. He did plead guilty to 7 felony charges, and Abby faced him in court and read her victim impact statement.
Wow.
He was sentenced to 45 to 90 years in prison. And Abby now lives in Maine and is a hairdresser and has a little boy. So she has moved on with her life. There is a show called Girl in the Shed on Hulu. And it's
that sounds
her story.
Terrible, though. I don't know that I could watch that after hearing this.
I think it was originally on Lifetime or maybe.
Okay, so it's not a documentary. It's like it's a made-for-TV movie type of thing.
Yeah,
okay.
I think it was originally on Lifetime or maybe mm-hmm. Lifetime Productions
right.
filmed it. But yeah. So where all of this happened with this Nate guy was only about 90 miles from where Mara Murray disappeared
wow.
and Brianna Maitland.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. So Mara Murray disappeared in mm-hmm. February of 2004, Brianna in March of 2004. And those two women disappeared about 90 miles from each other.
Jeez.
So not far from where Abby was taken, which is crazy to me because New Hampshire's only like...
It's pretty small.
I think I looked it up in like total land miles is like 9,000, which isn't that big. It's one of the smallest states.
It's small, but from what I've driven through, and it's not been all the state, obviously, but it's very wooded, hilly,
yes.
even more so than Arkansas.
Yeah, and there's lots of like water
yes.
and stuff.
There's so many places to unfortunately hide bodies, and it gets so cold there in the winter.
Right.
You know, so.
Anyways.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a ton of stuff about this case. Obviously, I didn't go into greater detail about all
yeah.
the things that he did while she was 9 months. 9 months.
That is so long. And you know that had to feel like decades to her.
Ugh. Well, and she's in a shed with no windows. She had no fresh air
God.
And had not been outside that entire time. 9 months. Locked in that
oh my gosh.
Storage container.
And those people that said it was all a ruse.
Oh, man.
That's terrible.
Well, and it's like, I don't want to say you can't fault people for acting like that, but look what happened in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
where that girl claimed she was kidnapped and she'd
yeah,
stopped.
Yeah, I mean, it can happen.
And so when you see this stuff, you're like, it's hard for you.
It gives every case
yeah.
a bad name when
yeah.
someone fakes anything.
Yeah, when you cry wolf, every case
yeah.
that is seriously mm-hmm. someone missing, you're like, well... Is it?
Man.
Yeah. No, I can't imagine her. 9 months. You know her mother had to have thought, she's dead. She's dead. I'm never going to see her again.
Yeah.
God. And for her just to walk in, oh my God.
Her jaw must have fell to the floor.
Oh, her heart, everything.
I can't believe, I'm glad, but I cannot believe he mm-hmm. just let her go.
Well, and I'm like, what would his end game have been?
Exactly.
If he wouldn't have made that counterfeit money and that girl got caught with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, were you going to keep her forever?
Probably.
It makes you really think about these other kids or teenagers or women who disappear
yeah.
that maybe they're same situation.
Yeah.
They're just like...
Some of them, you know, have to be.
Right.
Ugh.
Which is fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
I can't even... 30 miles away. Like, you wouldn't even...
No.
I mean, you can't... Go to every single...
You can't search every part of every city in a state.
Even a small state.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Wow. Well, the case that I'm about to talk about is awful. I get it if you want to skip through that. But as a palate cleanser in between cases, so I don't forget, today, we got some cocktails.
Well, from... The facial expressions about your upcoming case, we may need to make some of those.
Yeah. So Cody said, Jaeger and sugar-free Red Bull from your favorite type 2 diabetic.
Cody, I love you.
Thank you.
But I can't do Jaeger.
Okay. I've never had it in my life. Ever.
What?
Because no one I know, well, Cody now, no one I know drinks it. No one ever has it.
You went to college.
I did not drink in college, really.
Oh, you were that girl.
I was an art major. Okay.
You never did like a Vegas bomb or no?
Is that Jaeger?
Yes.
I guess not.
It tastes like black licorice.
Well, that's what I've heard. I like black licorice, but I've never had Jaeger.
Girl, if you start drinking Jaeger, I'm done with you.
But it's just one of those things. I'm like, I've never tried that.
I'm too old.
And
for
why
that.
Would I order it if I've never had it before? Right. You know what I mean? That's just something I don't know. But thank you, Cody.
Yeah, thanks, Cody. We'll Lacey will try that.
I'll have to find someone with Jaeger.
Maybe you can just buy like a little...
Like a little airplane bottle of Jaeger.
Yeah, I'm going to bring you a bottle of Jaeger for our next episode.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm going to video you drinking it.
I mean, I like
so
black licorice.
I want to see your face
when
you're like...
That seems like a weird combo with Red Bull, right?
No.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. People drink weird stuff. Like, I used to drink Di Serono and Dr. Pepper.
I've heard of weird things.
It tastes just like a Dr. Pepper.
Like, yeah.
And I would drink gin and Mountain Dew.
Oh, God. That sounds so weird. What in the West Virginia is that
saying? Well, and now I just drink vodka and tea, so.
Yeah. Well, you've got everyone doing that now.
Everyone does it. It's so funny. We went to brunch on Sunday, and our friend Zach orders, I ordered mine, Tito's and tea. He's like, yeah, I'll do the same. And then Tim gets there. And she's like, can I get you a drink? And he's like, yeah, I'll do a Tito's and tea. And she's like, so everybody?
She's like, what the hell is this drink?
I know. I'm like, well, you know.
I ask for lemonade and unsweet tea because it puts a little sweetness in it. But it's I can't just do unsweet tea and I can't just do sweet tea. But anyway, fun fact for anyone local to Little Rock, if you go to Fassler, and this isn't an ad, the Any Well drink with Rocktown vodka is $2 cheaper than Tito's.
I drink Rocktown when they have it.
Yeah, I always ask for it. And I had a friend say, hey, can I look at your ticket to see how much yours is compared to mine? It was, he got a tea in Tito's or whatever. $2.
I'm surprised at the local places who don't carry Rocktown. I'm like, it's around the block.
It's right there and it's cheaper.
And it's better. Good. Yeah. I think it's
comparable. Like, I probably wouldn't know the difference.
I would not.
But
honestly.
Anyway, so shout out to all those people and...
Thanks for
hashtag order local.
Yeah. Hashtag drink local.
But prepare yourself for my case after the break. Kimberly graduated from a nursing program at Pima Medical Institute in Tucson, Arizona, shortly before meeting David Cates, who would later become her husband in 1997. The couple welcomed a daughter, Jamie Lynn, a year after they got married. They later moved to Baltimore, Maryland, and in 2004, they returned to New England and settled in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire. Kimberly secured a job as a nurse at St. Joseph's Hospital in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is a career that friends and family have said was her calling. It was perfect for her loving and caring nature. Kimberly was also super outgoing and enjoyed staying physically fit. She loved supporting her daughter, Jamie, in all of her extracurricular activities. So, on the weekend of October 4th, 2009, her husband, David, was in Maryland for work. He worked for the company BAE Systems as an engineer and would often have to travel out of town for work. Kimberly and David lived in a tight-knit community, and the neighbors would often look after one another. Not like that at all here. I don't know any of my neighbors, but...
Do you not?
No, not a single one.
They scurry
inside like little rats.
I knew two of my neighbors that lived across the street from me, two different houses, but they both sold their houses and moved, and now I have new neighbors, and they're an elderly couple and then just an elderly woman, and I'm like, this is not the vibe.
One of our neighbors, it's going to be an Airbnb house, which is...
Oh, that's scary.
Kind of weird.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
So Kimberly and David also had a home security system that would alert law enforcement in the event of anything unusual occurring in the family home. Since David did travel a lot, this gave Kimberly a peace of mind, and they lived in a somewhat isolated area. They lived on Trail Road, which is a dirt road that runs through the woods. I've been to New Hampshire, and it, to me, what I saw of it, mostly dirt roads through the woods. Not a lot of cell service. It's been a few years, but it was kind of spooky in a way. In the early morning hours of October 4th, 42-year-old Kimberly felt a presence in her bedroom. She was sleeping with her 11-year-old daughter at the time, which was not unusual. They're both home alone. Kids sleep with their mom. You know how it goes. Well, Kimberly said, "Jamie, is that you?" It's dark in the room, and she felt the presence, thinking it's her. She got up or something. And she reached over for her bedside lamp, while Jamie in the bed responded, "Yeah, Mom." She was never able to turn on the light. The power lines had been cut.
Wait, the girl's name is Jamie? What's the little girl's name?
Kimberly's the mom, 42,
Jamie's the girl.
Jamie Lynn is the 11-year-old girl. So she thought, she felt a presence thinking it was her, but she was in bed with her. So
I'm sorry. I was confused for a second.
Yeah. So there were two men in the bedroom.
Two men,
one on each side of the bed.
Oh, I cannot think of anything more horrifying. Max will sleep with me sometimes. Mm-hmm. To have him in, oh my God.
And on each side. As soon as Kimberly spoke, both men began brutally attacking both Kimberly and Jamie.
The 11-year-old baby?
The man on Kimberly's side of the bed was swinging a machete like a baseball bat.
Oh my God.
On the other side, the other man was stabbing Jamie. Kimberly cried out, "You don't have to do this. Please stop." After realizing that they were not going to, Kimberly just tried to console her daughter.
Ugh.
While they were being viciously attacked, she kept saying, "Everything's going to be okay." I mean, what else can you do as a mother? Jamie was a sixth grader, but she had a black belt in karate, and she tried to defend her mom during the attack. She and her mom were extremely close. I just can't even imagine. So then Kimberly's throat was slit, and it was fatal. Jamie was lifted up and thrown across the room, shattering the glass door, and fell to the floor. One man gave Jamie a final hit of the machete, and then the pair left the house.
Lacey.
I know, It's,
you have ruined my makeup.
It's so brutal.
One
of the most brutal things to... I have Ashley crying over here. Kimberly, I don't even know. I can't even imagine how freaking terrible that is.
This is very... Oh, my God. It's just Max and I at home. I have a 10-year-old who sleeps with me. I can't even talk. I hate you. You're fired.
An autopsy was performed on Kimberly, and she sustained at least 32 injuries. Her skull was split open, her left eye socket destroyed, several organs were pierced, and some of her bones were hacked into pieces. And this is just how extreme she was attacked. And she survived all the blows. It's massive blood loss was the cause of death, which to me is the worst part.
Oh, my God.
It's like she sustained all that up until she just bled out. So Jamie also sustained massive injuries and was struck at least 18 times. Not a single part of her body was left untouched. Her skull was split open. Her jaw was shattered. And part of her left foot was severed. But she somehow survived. Jamie pretended to be dead.
Wait.
The little girl's alive. She survived. Yeah. She pretended to be dead. And after she heard the men leave, and I don't even know how she did this, she managed to make it to the kitchen and call the police. All those injuries, foot severed, jaw shattered,
It must have just been will to live, adrenaline, I don't know. But she made it into the kitchen. She did not bleed out. 11 years old. Can you imagine that trauma at 11 years old?
Max is 10. That's a tiny child.
Like someone to have that on them to make it to a kitchen and be the one to call police even. Ugh. There's no way I could listen to that 911 call.
I hate a 911 call.
Oh, there's no way. The men also stole one of David's old wallets, a pearl necklace, two wooden jewelry boxes, which would be a total of approximately $130. Yeah. The men did not leave much evidence behind. There was only a tire track left in the dirt road. It was extremely dark in the bedroom, and all Jamie knew for sure was one of the men was definitely white. She didn't know if the other one was or wasn't white.
Right.
Even though there was not much to go off of, the killers could not keep their mouths shut. The next morning, October 5th, a woman visited the Amherst Police Department. She said she overheard a conversation between her son, Kyle Fenton, and two of his friends, 17-year-old Stephen Spader and 19-year-old Christopher Gribble. What she heard made her fear that her son was somehow involved in the murder. She heard the boys bragging about the attack. Stephen Spader was a former Boy Scout who dropped out of high school and obtained his GED. After this, he decided to form a club called the Disciples of Destruction. His club consisted of 17-year-old Quinn Glover, 18-year-old William Marks, and 20-year-old Christopher Gribble. Stephen told his new recruits that they had to be part of an initiation. He said a home invasion was a rite of passage for them. They were self-proclaimed juggalos, which means they followed the rap group Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, I'm sure dear
that's
God.
Not really much of a thing anymore, but I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. They admired the Manson family and the Zodiac Killer, a bunch of bored, older teenagers, young adults.
I feel like that's a big misconception with people who like true crime, like you and I do. We're not obsessed. Like, we want to... Like, they're talking about.
I do not admire the
Manson we don't family. Admire anyone just because we talk about these things or we find them interesting.
Yeah. That's a whole different side of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, we're not impressed with murderers.
No.
So you can only imagine what they talked about as friends or in this club. According to authorities, by 5:30 a.m., Stephen, Christopher, Quinn, and William picked up their friend Autumn Savoy. They drove to the Cates home, and Stephen Spader said, quote, "We're about to do the most evil thing this town has ever seen."
That makes me want to throw up.
He knew. He knew it was the little girl and her mom. That's like they knew who lived there.
How did they know who lived there?
They just were researching houses that were kind of on dirt roads and stuff.
In the middle of nowhere?
They didn't know them.
Okay.
They just were like, this house, we can probably get away with it.
Right.
Autumn did not participate in the murders or burglary and never went inside the house, but he helped in the cover-up and provided a false alibi for the gang. After the attacks, they dumped their bloody clothes, shoes, and some of the stolen belongings into the Nashua River and went home. Why even steal stuff? After they rested, they went to their friend Kyle's house, and this is where they discussed the murder. So, this is when Kyle's mom overheard the conversation. Kyle was not involved in the murder. These were all of his friends. So, he's not involved. But luckily, his mom heard everything. And I'm shocked she didn't call them out or anything. She just went to the police and was like, oh my God, I think my son is involved in this.
Yeah.
Which, kudos to her, honestly. I mean, they wouldn't have kept their mouth shut anyway. Mm. But you know what I mean? Stephen Spader straight up admitted that he did it. He bragged to numerous people and even wrote letters about the attacks.
Oh my God.
Sick. Christopher was second in command and repeatedly slashed the then 11-year-old Jamie with a knife. He was also a former Boy Scout. I'm not sure if he and Stephen bonded over this, if this is how they became friends. I really don't know. But before Christopher got entangled in this club, he considered joining the Marines. But not because he was a patriot or anything, because he loved weapons and he wanted to use them on people. Just wanted to join the Marines to kill people.
It's awful.
How these boys all are that evil, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, and they all meet up. Ugh. So the boys, like I said, didn't know the Cates family. They just chose a house that was secluded. It was purely a thrill kill with no motive behind it. And they thought they'd get away with it. Once Stephen was in jail awaiting trial, he wrote an open letter and said that the citizens of New Hampshire were uninformed idiots. I know. It's like they just thought they were so smart. They could just say whatever they wanted. It's so, ugh. Then he wrote a letter to Chad Landry, who was a fellow inmate at the Hillsborough County Jail's maximum security section. In the letter, he described the entire murder, what led up to it, and what they did after. A handwriting expert looked at it and confirmed it was Stephen who wrote it. So they're not really trying to hide anything, which their attorneys are probably like, oh, we're screwed.
Yeah.
I don't know what attorney took on their cases.
Probably a one that's a public defender.
Yeah. Stephen Spader went to trial, and his defense attorney tried to make it look like a reasonable doubt case, but it didn't work on the jury. In October 2010, he was found guilty on two counts of first-degree murder, attempted murder, conspiracy to burglary, and witness tampering. He was sentenced to life without parole and an additional 76 years for the attempted murder of Jamie. Judge Jillian Abramson made sure each of the sentences were consecutive to one another and said it was to, quote, ensure that you stay in that cage for the rest of your pointless life.
Damn.
That's on the nose. I mean, that's true. Just be mean to these people. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Christopher Gribble's trial was not scheduled to begin until February 2011, but in early December 2010, he surprised the court by admitting to the crimes. In his statement to police, he said he wanted to kill someone for a long time and was disappointed that he didn't feel any emotion after he killed Kimberly.
Oh my,
these.
What is wrong with people?
It's terrifying. He told police that he and the others planned on just burglarizing the home and just killing anyone who might be there just for fun. Like, no, you went with a machete and a knife. Like, you plan on killing someone.
And they had to have been able to see somewhat in the bedroom to know that there was a small child also in the bed.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, they knew who lived there. They weren't like, oh, well, what do we do if the kid's home? That conversation never happened. Quinn Glover's attorney managed a plea deal in exchange for a lesser charge. He pleaded guilty to burglary, robbery, and conspiracy to commit burglary. He received a sentence of 20 to 40 years. His testimony likely helped him because he actually showed some signs of remorse.
Mm-hmm.
It was a stark contrast to Christopher and Stephen. He also was the first to tell the police everything. He said he stood in the bedroom doorway during the murder with his hands on his ears, but he never left to get help or attempt to stop the guys or anything.
Right.
He said, quote, every moment that I close my eyes, I see what I could have done and how I could have prevented this horror that I helped set in motion. There's nothing that I can ever do to make up for my despicable actions, for the cowardice I showed.
This is horrifying.
I don't know how you could watch that.
I don't know how you could listen to someone even talk about planning something like this.
Sometimes, not in this case necessarily, but I've seen cases where it's like a group of friends get kind of caught up and they don't really think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they just kind of get that in their heads and then it happens and they're shocked by it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did you think? Did you think it would be fun?
Oh, man.
William Marks was sentenced to 30 to 60 years for conspiracy to commit murder, burglary, and first-degree assault. He initially lied about his involvement and had conversations with his father about selling his story to a national media outlet to make money.
Gross.
Ugh. So William was deeply involved in planning the random home invasion. So he wasn't one that wielded the knife or anything, mm-hmm. but he and Stephen targeted a home next door before deciding on the Cates home. So he was working with him on trying to figure out which house to get, and he was there while it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Autumn Savoy pleaded guilty to conspiracy and hindering apprehension and was sentenced to 5 to 12 years in prison. He was released after just 2.5 years. So Autumn was the friend that helped them get rid of the evidence and gave the false alibi. The earliest that Quinn Glover could make parole is this year, 2024. Corrections officials said the earliest that he could be released would be 2029. William Marks is also eligible for parole this year, 2024.
Well, hopefully it's denied.
I know.
Because people like that do not deserve to be out. It's terrifying.
So their ages at the time of the crime prohibited the death penalty in the state of New Hampshire. They're basically like 17, 18, 19, 20.
Yeah.
In, you know, all those ages. On March 25th, 2011, Christopher Gribble received as much punishment as the state of New Hampshire would allow. A mandatory life sentence without parole. The judge told him that infinity is not enough jail time.
No.
Even though Stephen was the ringleader of the group, Christopher made such callous statements during his trial that he was considered the most cold-blooded, even over Stephen. He said during his testimony, quote, "I just felt nothing. It was kind of cool because it was different. It was like a curiosity. Oh, that's what bones look like."
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine as the jury, my mouth would just be on the floor like, what is wrong with you?
I would be bawling and, oh, God.
I couldn't. Mm-mm. Being a part of that jury, they probably needed therapy after this.
Oh, because you know they showed them photographs, crime scene.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
He also claimed that he was more methodical than Stephen and was more precise with his stabs. Why would you brag about that on the stand? This just shows you how...
He doesn't care. He's no remorse.
He does not care at all.
He's no remorse.
Ugh. He said that when he cut Kim's throat, he moved very carefully from the carotid artery he cut. He said that he had to adjust at one point because he got the angle wrong. He also said he remembered hitting her spine. He just talked about all of this like it was nothing. Psychiatrists were called in to discuss his mental state. His attorney was trying to, you know, get him to plead insanity or whatever, but all the psychiatrists said he's not insane. He knew exactly what he was doing. They identified him as having antisocial personality disorder. He was a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs and therapy are not going to fix this man.
No.
He was sentenced to life. In commemorating Kimberly Cates' life and seeking accountability for her death, her family and allies have become advocates for change within a justice system that has often failed to protect victims of violent crimes. Their unwavering determination serves as a beacon of hope in the pursuit of justice as they continue to demand answers, transparency, and meaningful action to address the injustices that have affected countless families. Her legacy endures as a call to action, a reminder that every victim deserves recognition, respect, and resolution. And from what I can tell, Jamie stays out of the limelight, but as of 2019, she was playing field hockey at her university and studying public health. I'm sure by now she's graduated and has a career. Each October, there's a golf tournament in Amherst to raise money for the Kimberly Cates Scholarship Fund. I couldn't find the exact date for this year, but you can go to kimcatesfund.org for updates, for a place to donate. Their theme is kind of like take back the date because it's in October around the date that she was murdered. So it's like they're taking that back. And yeah, this case just shocked me. I cannot believe this little girl survived. I'm glad she did.
You had me over here crying. It's
awful. Just the sheer brutality that they didn't care.
No remorse.
I don't even know what to say. Like, these guys, and they just,
Well, they're kids too. They're teenagers.
And that's the thing. It's like Christopher, who was so just cold with no emotion or anything, you look at him and you're like, that's just some dumb teen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Go home and play video games.
You like this band?
Just, yeah. What is wrong with you? And I don't know. They're just...
Let's change the subject. This is so sad. I'm about to cry again.
I'm sorry. It's a... I had never heard of it.
I've never either. And just, now I know why. I don't typically... I will click off of...
Trash.
Ugh.
I do not have any sympathy for them.
None.
Serving a life, even though they were 17, 18. Like, you cannot, you can't tell me you can come back from that. Be talking about it like that in front of the family. You cannot tell me someone could, I don't know. That's about the closest thing to evil I could imagine. I'm sorry. What's something happy? We have a new patron.
There, that's happy.
I'm really sorry to talk about that now.
Please, because my ulcer is acting up now. Ugh. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get sick. It's so that.
I know. I'm sorry, whew, everybody.
That was tough. That was a tough one.
Yeah, it really was. We have Starla D. And I already thought she was a patron.
Maybe it's another Starla.
Well, she DMs us a lot and gives us fun stories and stuff, so we've heard her name.
Okay, maybe that's what it is.
I think she's bought us drinks and stuff before, but I'm like, oh, you're not already? She's our 100th. She is from Georgia.
Come on, I didn't add her yet.
Yeah, she just messaged her address. We'll send you some goodies. Thank you so much for joining us. We're glad you're finally here.
100.
You have a lot of episodes to catch up on.
Yes, you do.
Oh, man. And I just mailed out another batch of stickers. So if you're new to Patreon, be on the lookout. I was waiting until a new design came in. But, yeah.
What's the t-shirt update? The stickers are in.
They will be done printing. It'll take about 2 weeks. So
okay, good.
It'll be a minute. This will air on the 11th. So they're going to be done on the 18th. So I'll be that week. I'll be like messaging people, getting info and all that fun stuff.
Good, good. Totally random. Did you see that there is a comet that's going to happen during the eclipse?
No.
Yes. And guess what? It's called the Devil's Comet. Google it.
The Devil's Comet?
That's what it's called. It's during the solar eclipse. It may be visible to the naked eye. It's a city-sized comet, and it happens approximately every 71 years. And its closest approach to Earth will be April the 21st. So, but yeah, it's huge. It's like every 71 years, like Halley's Comet. Same day.
That is really weird.
It's super weird. I'm telling you guys. Something weird's going on.
We got a message from MK and she said, I'm glad you found the Dark Parts podcast. I love Daphne and Heath.
Oh, she listens to it too. I love it. It's my new favorite. Well, I've almost binged it.
She said they have another podcast that's called Going West. She said it's awesome too.
I have to write that
down. She said it's the first true crime podcast she got into. I hadn't
Going like, West?
That's really cool. I'll have to check it out. Yeah.
I love Dark Parts.
I haven't listened yet, but I'm gonna.
It's
for sure.
Really good.
Oh, and we got a gift this week, which was so sweet and unexpected. It was from Jacqueline. Let me go to her info so I can just give her all the plugs because it's amazing.
It's Easter cookies.
Oh my gosh.
They're
I'll post a picture.
So cute.
Jacqueline sent us some Easter cookies. She works at Jack's Cookie Jar in the Red Bay, Russellville, Alabama area. So if you're in that area, you need these cookies. I ate one today with my coffee. So good.
They're so cute.
Oh my gosh. They make you not want to eat them.
Oh, I was going to say, they look like
they're too cute, but they taste paintings. Really good, which is shocking. She has so many cool ones. Her Instagram is Jax, J-A-X, Cookie Jar. Go follow her. And Jax is my cat name, by the way, so.
But you're right. Most of the time, the cookies that look.
They're not good, yeah.
As pretty kinda as.
Like cake.
Yeah, as pretty as hers look.
They're really freaking good.
You're like, it wasn't good. It was dry or it was this.
Yeah, and she gave me a tip that since they're thicker, you can pop them in the microwave for a little bit to soften them.
Oh.
But I dip mine in coffee, so it softened them up. But
you dip your
so
cookies
good.
In coffee?
Oh, yes.
Gross.
What?
I don't drink coffee.
I cannot believe you don't drink coffee.
No.
How did you get through having a baby?
Diet Coke.
Well, I do that too.
Crystal meth. No, I'm kidding. My God.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, boy.
So I watched a movie this weekend, Max and I did, on, I think it's on Netflix. It's called Countdown. Pretty good stuff. Basically, these college kids download this app at a party called Countdown. So they're talking.
It sounds familiar.
They're talking and the girl's like,
Google it.
Oh, I don't go over this many calories because I have this app. And the other friend's like, I need that app. What's it called? And she's like, it's called Countdown to Skinny. And so she's putting it in her app store and she's like, is this it? And they're like, no, what is that? And she reads it and it's like, it's a countdown. Will tell you when you're going to die. So they're like, let's all download it. And the one who's dying first has to finish all the drinks at the table. So they're going around.
They think it's a fun, stupid app.
And it's all like, oh, I got 85 years. Oh, I got 61 years. And one girl has like 2 hours.
2 hours?
Yes. So it's got the girl from You in it. Like the first season of You.
Okay.
It's got her in it. It's pretty good. It doesn't have a lot of blood and guts and gore, but it's got a lot of jump scares. It's really good.
Interesting.
It's good. And it's not too crazy that like Max couldn't watch it with me.
Yeah, okay.
We both were like glued to the TV.
Interesting.
It's I give it 5 stars.
Okay.
So you should check that out. My new friend and listener Kyle has been keeping me updated on all things Sopranos. He sent me pics this weekend from the diner that they're at in the season finale, in the final scene. And he's got onion rings on the table. He's with James Gandolfini's stunt double. Apparently, they auctioning off that booth. Or maybe they already have,
which is super sad. I wonder how much it went for.
Oh, I know.
Tons.
You think?
Oh,
I always wonder.
There's so many diehard fans.
Listen.
You know what I mean?
I always wonder what stuff like that goes for. You know, like a chair, you know, when they like redo like a baseball field.
How do you find these auctions?
No kidding. But I'm like, man, don't do that. That's like your claim to fame, I would think. I mean, I don't know. I don't live in New Jersey. Maybe this diner is fantastic, but.
I'll ask. You can ask him. I was like, I have a friend in Jersey. You do too.
I was super jealous. I'm like, damn it. Not me having to go to New Jersey. But now.
They pump gas for you there. Did you know that?
Girl, a friend of ours and I were just having this talk about how it infuriates us to have to pump gas. And we were like, where are the states that do it for you? Now I know. New Jersey.
We drove through New Jersey, but we didn't get gas there. Sam's the kind of person that would find that awkward. Like, oh, no, what do? You tip them, you do this.
No.
You just stay in your car, they fill up your gas, and you're on your way. Amazing. I would never hate getting gas.
There used to be a long time ago.
That used to be the way.
I remember whenever I was little, you would have like full service stations or gas stations.
I remember that.
Where they would clean your window and check your fluids while the gas was pumping. You never got out of the car.
Yeah. I miss those days.
Same.
I hate getting gas.
It infuriates me.
What infuriates me is if Samuel's driven my car for some reason and I get it back and the light's on.
No. That's just rude.
I can't drive with that on. It freaks me out. I have to get gas immediately. But if it's on, I'm like, why did you give me this terrible gift?
Well, that's why no one drives my car ever. I'm going through this little housekeeping notes that I have. T-shirts, stickers. Football started back for Max.
Oh, I was like, I thought that just
2 weeks. 2 weeks. We've been off sports 2 weeks.
Oh,
and we
God.
Had practice last night. I'm excited. I have to
tell
you.
Well, that's good.
I'm excited about the spring weather.
I am too.
Not tornado season.
Oh, I hope not.
I patio hopped this weekend. We rode dirt bikes. I'm ready to plant some shit now.
Oh my gosh, me too. I did a lot of prep work in my backyard over the weekend. I was so, my serotonin was going.
I did this yesterday.
I was picking weeds. I bought my first thing on TikTok. Have you bought anything on TikTok shop?
No, never.
I got on Gardener's TikTok for some reason, and this thing called Grandpa's Weeder, where it's like you stick it in, you twist, and you pull up all these weeds.
Does it look like a claw?
Yeah.
And girl, they sell that shit at Home Depot.
They do, but for like $40. Same brand. I got it for $13.99 plus tax.
Look at you.
This is not an ad, but I'll tell you how it goes. Weeds are my nemesis. If I could tell you how much I hate weeds, I do everything.
And they just
come back. They will survive. Oh my God. I've tried everything. I've done it all. So
are they in your flower bed?
Yes. They're everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
The people that did our rock stuff did not put a barrier down.
So it's a
nightmare. Yeah.
Oh no.
I'll let you know. It's coming. I cannot wait for it to come in.
I'm so excited. She's more excited about this than the birth of her child.
I'm like, I can't wait to get the weeds out.
Also, yay, seasonal allergies.
Oh, I'm dreading.
Oh, I already have it. It hasn't. Well, you don't leave your house hardly, so
I go outside.
If you get out, I'm like always clearing my throat. I'm dying. Next week, South Dakota, and Patreon space.
Yeah.
Do you have a case? There's a couple that you're.
Yeah.
Well, don't have all the space cases.
I don't know what to do. I'll have to.
We'll discuss it. Yeah. And maybe you can pick one and I'll pick the other.
That sounds good.
There's not a whole lot about space. I mean, there's some random, I'll go down a rabbit hole. I'll be talking about black holes and all kinds of shit.
Black holes terrify me.
I know.
I'm scared of space. So I'll find something for sure.
I'm excited about space Patreon.
I am too.
So you guys should join us.
Yeah. Go to patreon.com/United States of Murder. Join us. We have monthly bonus episodes. Our last one, in my opinion, is really good. It's really long.
What do you mean that's the best?
I didn't want to like just throw it out there. But yeah, if that's your kind of thing, it was medical mysteries. And yeah, we do monthly bonus episodes. You can listen ad-free to our regular episodes. And we'll send you stickers. You know the rest. Shout-outs, fun stuff. But yeah. In the meantime, join us on Instagram, too, at United States of Murder. And on Facebook at US of M Podcast, I think. Yes.
Next week, South Dakota.
South Dakota. Bye.